is 9 a.m. on September 12th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, where we are a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. To learn more about Central Atlanta Progress, you'll want to go to atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and my co-host Elizabeth Gordon is wheeling and dealing out in Singapore for the next few weeks. Poor her. So we're going to have a couple of different guest hosts sitting in. And my first victim is Peter Ashley. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Dana. Good to be here. Thank you.
We are going to just be winging it today like we always do. We're supposed to have, this is going to be a funny day because we're supposed to have three guests in the studio, but we have one guest in the studio. Hi, Larry.
Dana, how are you?
So Larry White from the Ritz Group is joining us, and we are expecting Farouk Hunter. Hopefully he'll roll in. And I did get an email from our other guest, Jewel Anderson, from Under 30 Following the Vision. She's having car trouble. Oh, so hopefully she's trying to roll in. Did you know that you can now listen to internet radio in your car? Did you know that, guys?
I didn't.
I have a Samsung. I do.
So, yeah, there's an app called
the other radio.
Yeah, there's an app called TuneIn that you can download on your mobile phones. And you can hear anything you want to hear off internet radio, right? On your phone, of course, now everybody can plug their phone into their car. So what's the point of regular radio anymore? And not to be catty, but I am kind of catty, as I think you both know. Peter and Larry have both been in the studio with me before, so they've experienced this. But radio,
they came back.
And they came back. That is saying something. So, but radio in Atlanta is in a big uproar right now. Everything, the stations are shifting and radio music stations are going away and mm-hmm. sports and talk are coming in and they just can't bring in the advertising dollars anymore.
Not if there's a lot of opportunities for media in any different variety. I mean, what's the point?
Well, and yeah, there's so much competition mm-hmm. for your ears and eyes, of course, now that it makes it very difficult. But, you know, I was having a conversation with Lee Cantor, the guy that owns Business Radio X, where we are broadcasting right now. And he was saying, you know, they pay obviously a lot more money to be in business than we do. I mean, they have to pay just to own that little slice of the airwaves that they own. And so then they have to cover their costs, of course, not to mention their buildings and their studios and their expensive talent and all that stuff. But, you know, just to be broadcasting, they're paying a lot of money. And so then they've got to get all those advertisers to make up for that. Whereas internet radio, it's just easy.
Well, it's all about content, too, and the fact that you can catalog by topic in multiple places that are accessible.
Right.
And the user then can pick their time to listen to that particular segment. I pulled up the segment on yesterday from Business Radio X, and I did it on my Samsung tablet.
Right.
And going in my car, right. Driving, right. With my headphones on. And it was neat because I had pre-programmed where I was going to go before
did
I got in the car.
Did you say driving with your headphones on?
No, I have earpiece.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, yeah, don't drive with your earphones on, Larry. We're going to be worried about you.
We'll have to take the blindfold off.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, you know, the other thing that Lee was talking about is you talk about cataloging things and looking for exactly what you want. I mean, that's the case with music now because
sure,
you can – why do you have to listen to DJs – and commercials when you can either have, if you have satellite, certainly, but even if you don't now, you have your phone, you use your, you know, your iTunes or your Google Music or whatever it is. And
your Business Radio X.
Or your Business Radio X, and you listen to exactly what you want to listen
sure.
to
exactly.
without having to wait for them to play something you might like. And so, of course, Lee was making the point that now what's really going to keep radio going, if it does keep going, is going to be personalities, because that's what people like Howard Stern's, you know, people that... You don't get that conversation unless you listen to that show, because those people are interesting. So that could still potentially work. But those people, if they're good, like a Howard Stern, are expensive. So that,
or Dana.
Or they're me, or right? Dana. And then they're exactly. then they're cheap. But don't tell anyone. Don't. That's our little secret, just the three of us.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we get into interviewing our invisible guests, Farouk and Jewel, and our visible guest, Larry, we're going to...
Well, good thing it's radio if they're invisible. So
that's true. Yeah. That is true.
Yeah, you gave it away.
I know. Well, because when I start talking to them and they don't answer, I just wanted people to understand.
I can do like different voices.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So,
all right, we're going to do that.
They wouldn't even know.
We'll interview... Yeah, you're going to do Jewel?
Sure.
I love it. This is the best show on radio right here, people. All right, so we do like to do the headlines a little bit. Now, of course, we don't do the real headlines because I'm sure there's like there are real headlines this morning. Some major stuff going on in Libya, was it, with the ambassador getting killed and whatever. We don't talk about stuff like that. We talk about whatever's chat-worthy in sort of the business arena. And one random story I want to mention, just because I think sometimes there's some synchronicity in the way things are. I noticed a story about the San Francisco mobile payment startup Square. Have you guys heard of Square? It's that little tiny plastic. I'm doing a visual.
It's a four-sided.
It's a square. Right. Four-sided little. Yeah,
that I've heard of.
It's a little white plastic thing that you plug into your Android or iPhone, and you can take credit cards. It's
Card
swiper.
Okay, sure.
And Square.
Well, PayPal has that also.
Yeah. Though Square is really like revolutionizing it, because in the sense that they have done in a way what Apple did, in that they're like a really cool looking company. They've got a cool looking website. They make it really easy for you. You go online, basically you put in three pieces of information and they send you the Square reader for free. And you don't pay anything unless you use it.
They're in the merchant banking business.
Exactly. And they have a couple of plans. They have another plan where you can pay a little bit more, a set monthly fee, I think, and take up to a certain number of transactions or whatever. I'm not sure of the deal. But I just think it's kind of a little bit of synchronicity for me, because I hadn't heard of them until a couple weeks ago. Someone randomly that I'm doing business with asked me to get one, actually to do some videos that I'm working on for somebody. And so then I became aware of them. And so there they were in my mind. And then I see this story that they're moving into Atlantic Station. They're having their Atlanta headquarters is going to be here in Atlantic Station. So, and they were talking about the investment into the company. Starbucks is investing in them. They took, I don't know if you guys remember the story a few months back where Google laid off a bunch of people here in Atlanta. So Square picked them up, basically, is what happened. So it's just kind of very interesting. I mean, they seem to be playing an interesting, you know, game and doing well at it. So,
what's it do? It's for merchants to be able to take transactions.
Yeah, anybody can take credit cards.
I'll give you an example. I was at a Square where they had the fair vendors.
Yeah,
and went to get a hot dog or a barbecue.
Right.
And the lady in the truck, the trailer, had her iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And she took credit cards and she just swiped the credit card.
Yeah.
And then you just sign it. And away you go.
It's kind of
a
beautiful
slow
thing.
But it was neat.
But it works. Yeah. You know, back in the day, I had an independent bookstore and we would do out of store sales. Of course, we had normal merchant services in our store that was instant and we knew if people were approved or whatever. But when we were out of store, we couldn't afford the mobile stuff at the time. And so we just took the old fashioned, I wish I could do the visual demonstration, you know, of the old fashioned. Oh, that was better than mine, Peter. Thanks. Thank you for being here. It was worth it just for that sound effect. But, you know, we would take the old fashioned ones and we would have people sign them and we would write down their phone number and whatever. And then we would go back to the store later that day and we would process this batch of credit cards. And there were often times where one of them would be bad and we were screwed. There was really nothing we could do. And so, yeah, it was Larry's. Exactly. So it is really cool that you can now do that. And it allows a lot of people that are doing really small business type things to
compete.
Yeah. Or just also not to get screwed. I mean, let's call a spade here. You know, I do a lot of things in the acting and, you know, video world. And, you know, people are taking checks for recording videos for you, for acting classes, whatever. Now they can just run your credit card and have that security of knowing, especially a bunch of actors, you know, those checks are bouncing all over town. Just saying. So, you know, I think it's really cool. Anyway, it's also cool that they're moving into Atlantic Station because that area needs a little bit more action. So maybe it'll get some now.
It's good.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Atlantic Station? It kind of didn't turn out the way it was planned. You know, well, you weren't really around when it first started. You're new to town. How about you? Anything?
I was there for a couple of meetings and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't frequent that on a daily, nightly basis. So I'm not really a good judge of that.
Yeah. You're not seeing the crowds.
But conceptually, what they've designed conceptually, and the fact that I can park underneath the meeting place that I have to attend, I thought was really neat as far as a new ecosystem of business, work, and pleasure.
Yeah.
But I don't frequent it enough to know. I just love the layout.
Well, I think the biggest problem with it became, I think in a way it was almost just the way the condo market sort of fell apart. I mean, they were going to sell. Well, also, I think there was some shoddy construction. auction, and I could be making that up, but I think there were a lot of pre-sales in that area for condos, and then there were some problems with construction and people backed out, and so then they had a lot of empty units sitting there. You know, if they had filled the area, I think, with people buying that level of condo at that price point, they would have had a different crowd there than what sort of ended up there, I think, is
what
happened.
Well, also, remember, in 2008, the high-end marketplace was tremendously impacted.
Right.
So everybody, whether it was Atlantic Station or Lenox Square or Phipps Plaza,
right,
was impacted. So you wonder if the downturn, or quote, if I sense disappointment in your mind, was due to the physicality of the layout,
yeah,
or the idea, or was it really due to the economy?
Yeah, I think both. I think some of the things happened first, and then when the bad economy came,
yeah,
it couldn't pick back up where they left off, kind of thing. But I think they're actually working hard to bring it back now, to sort of change the flavor of what's going on there, to bring in some different kind of retailers. And now some businesses like this, I think they're really trying to get those people in. So I think it'll be interesting to keep an eye on it.
And the neat thing about, or the bad thing about real estate, is the fact that they're not working on a 3-year plan. You know, they're working on a 20, 25, 30-year plan. So they expect rollover.
Yeah.
And they can roll over their tenants. They can roll over their genre.
Yeah,
they manage it on a larger scale. So,
yeah.
So this is probably pretty much expected by the landlords.
But now, how long have you been in the Atlanta area?
Well, that'll give away my age.
Okay, well, approximately.
Probably 40 years.
Okay, you didn't really. You could have lied. I would have gone with whatever you said.
40 years. You could have moved here when you were 2.
Yeah,
or
I did.
20,
it was just a baby. Yeah.
That's right.
So you never know.
Well, the reason I even asked that is because there was that shopping center out in Marietta that was like all the rage when it first opened. I can't think of what it's called right now. It'll come to me. Like Merchant Square.
Merchant's Walk.
Merchant's Walk. Thank you. And it just never worked. It never worked. It had like a moment of a heyday when it first opened because people were excited, and then it died. And now maybe you could sort of say it's kind of coming back, but it really now it's just a strip shopping center now.
Well, they do. And you realize that I've owned stores in Park Place.
Okay. So you know the area really well.
Phipps.
Yeah.
Perimeter.
Yeah. So you know
I had one in Lenox.
And some of those things have always worked and some of them have not.
But again, it's back to the fact that what they were when you go in at the beginning of the lease and how they turn over
and change.
How they, and that's good because that's exciting.
Yeah. It's growth.
You know, when I always had to laugh that when you'd go in a mall and you'd see the boards up, you know, you'd have one or two attitudes at that point in time.
Yeah.
Most people would say, oh, that is so neat. We're having something brand new coming in there, and that's exciting.
Right.
You know, so that's wonderful. You don't usually go by and say, oh, that one didn't make it.
Yeah, although sometimes you do wonder what they're doing, Larry. Like
absolutely.
I have to wonder about I'm sorry, but I'm off on a tangent now. It happens. I have to wonder about that whole Lego thing at Phipps. It's so weird. Have you guys seen that?
Of course. I've got 2 kids.
Did you take them there?
We did.
Okay, so good, because I wondered I had no business going in there. I have no little ones, and so
You're not allowed in without kids.
Is it fun inside
there? They won't let adults go in without children.
Well, that's probably smart, because otherwise it would turn into something weird and creepy.
Right. It's pretty cool.
Is it cool inside?
It is.
Okay.
It is. It's there's a little part where you see how Legos are made and the whole process, how they melt down the plastic and form the Legos.
Okay.
And then you go through. The coolest part for me was the Lego mini city. So they had all the Atlanta landmarks built in Legos.
That's interesting.
And it would go from night to daytime.
Huh.
In the room, and it would everything would change. All the buildings would light up, and it was pretty neat.
See that.
And we stayed for hours, and the kids went crazy in that place.
Really?
Yeah.
And there's places for them to play and everything.
Oh yeah, then you have you can build all kinds of cars and trucks with Legos. There's a thing where you can build a tower.
Yeah.
And then you can push a button and it shakes the ground underneath.
See
the
if
tower
your tower is like earthquake proof,
and to see what level of earthquake it can handle.
Huh.
And then of course you go through this Lego store at the end, which is no surprise.
Where they want you to buy stuff.
Well, you have to. You can't get out without buying something.
Yeah.
I think that I've not seen it, but just the fact that we're talking about it suggests what a neat thing that is from a product marketing point of view. Lego has been here for 60 years.
Yeah.
You know, and talk about this is how a business can reinvent itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then go back and create a demand. How can you take your kids to the to that Lego facility, to that store, and not
buy them some
and
Legos.
Not buy them some
you
Legos.
You have to buy something. You yeah. do. Just, you literally have to
you
buy
cannot
something.
Do it. I mean, it's
it's genius.
It really is.
Well,
and Lego with the Star, you know, the Star Wars Legos,
yeah.
the Harry Potter Lego. I mean, they've stayed current.
Yeah.
And relevant.
Right.
And right as we speak, my kids have their floor is basically a sea of Legos.
Yeah,
right
absolutely.
Now.
Well, that's certainly
you're creating demand.
I'm glad to hear that because from the outside, I feel like it looks really strange. You know,
well,
like
it was jam packed. I mean, it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and there was a line out the door to even get in.
And look at the other thing that Phipps Plaza did for many years when we had our store there that was fabulous was their Santa Claus and their Christmas decorations. I mean, it was really brought people into the mall. It got people associated with the mall. They saw all the new stores that mm-hmm. were up, irrespective of what they thought of it before. Now they had a brand new vision, a brand new horizon. So these kind of promotional opportunities are great. So here's the deal. Okay. The three of us go together. We're going to create a Lincoln Log store.
There you go. Right next to the Lego store.
Right next to the Lego store.
Exactly.
It's Wendy's and Chick-fil-A.
There you go.
You know?
Exactly.
That's true. That's awesome. I love it. I think it's interesting, though, that you bring up the Santa because you're, in a way, the Lego store is kind of like having Santa there
absolutely.
Every day. You know,
absolutely.
There's a reason why the kids, because there's really nothing else in Phipps for kids. There's like one kid's store or something, kids'
right.
clothing, I think, that's super overpriced. Oh, sorry to whoever store that was. And
just don't mention the name of it. I don't know what it is.
I don't either. But really, so it is kind of interesting because that's sort of a very grown-up mall, I think, but not anymore. Right. So interesting. All right. I'll give it a pass.
Yeah, it's good.
And they're renovating the theater in there, too. I'm off on a total tangent about Phipps now. But they're renovating the AMC theater. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out, too. That business is also interesting to watch, especially here in Atlanta. Things are changing. So, okay, randomly switching topics. I mentioned before that I had a bookstore at one time, so I could not help but mention this story. The Gwinnett Library is now going to have a vending machine.
This is depressing.
For books.
Sorry.
Why is it depressing?
It's just depressing that books are now reduced to being at a vending machine.
A vending machine.
Right.
So
the
problem is, of course, that libraries all over the country are dying.
Maybe that's the depressing part.
Painful
for me.
Death.
Maybe not so much the vending machine. But.
It's very sad. I feel like this is a little bit true of a lot of culture in general, sort of the old school culture. Maybe not museums as much, but to some extent museums, places like the Atlanta History Center, the Symphony. Libraries are sort of the younger crowd is just not going. And when I say younger, I mean like 40 and under probably are not going.
This is the flip side, if I may jump in. This is the flip side of what we just talked about before, about people getting content, whatever
content.
They want, whenever
Absolutely.
They want it.
Exactly.
It's killing the places that you normally would have to go.
It's
really a different experience. I mean, you know, my kids have library cards. We take them to the library, and it is completely different.
Right.
Experience.
Than reading on your Kindle.
Than reading on the Kindle. And reading on the Kindle is totally fine.
Right.
But for children, that experience of seeing all the books, the visual impact of all the books.
Right.
Going through and picking them is a different experience than just, you know, scrolling
click,
through
click,
something.
Click, click, click.
Yeah.
And so it's very sad in that respect. I mean, I had a bookstore. I love books, obviously, though I've also given in and have a Kindle and an iPad and whatever else now. But and I enjoy those things, but I also still enjoy books. Anyway, the point is that they're going to have vending machines because they don't have staff, so they need to cut back on their hours, but they still want people to have access. So they're going to have these book vending machines at their libraries. And I'm just seeing this as like a doomed effort.
How do they get all the different book size books to come out?
I don't. It's going to be very – I think they're going to have one of those wheelie-dealy things that where they slide forward and they get stuck and they don't come down
and
you're banging on the outside of the glass of the vending machine.
Well, if it works, we'll have a red box for books.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's basically what the news story was sort of comparisoning it. Compared, yeah, that.
That's a new one.
Yeah. I'm just making it up as I go. But
we noticed.
Yeah, that's kind of how I roll. But that's what the story was comparing it to. And
a red book for
– Yeah, but the thing is – well, first of all, I don't – think either of those can really last too long because digital is going to take over completely.
Absolutely.
I mean, what's the point of having to drive somewhere and get something out of a box when you can get it online
right.
in 2 seconds? I mean, I realize that not everybody has all that technology yet.
Right.
But they will.
But
yeah.
they will.
Yeah.
It's
a short runway.
Yeah.
And some of it is this selection, though, because I've noticed, you know, Netflix, the content is getting more and more, but
yeah,
there wasn't as many online videos, movies you could watch compared to the ones you could get on DVD. You could get anything you wanted on DVD.
Right.
So if you still want some of the older things or some of the things that aren't, have not been put on
digital
streaming,
right,
you have to get the DVD. And so I think there's still a market for it until everything
goes digital.
Is streaming. Yeah.
Well, so for a while, though, I'm not doing it now. I had the Netflix, both. Yeah. I had the DVD and the streaming. And so I could pretty much get whatever I wanted that way. But then I decided I didn't need the DVDs anymore. And I just figure I'll make do with what's on. Between Hulu and Netflix, I'm pretty much covered.
Yeah.
I use Xfinity and the same
idea.
Same idea.
Yeah.
You know, you can pretty well find it on the DVD, the streaming
right.
part, and it really works well.
Yeah,
it does.
I'm in one of those situations where I'm in a rental and I don't have good cable, so I just made up for it with these two $7.99 a month online services. So for $15 a month, I pretty much have everything I need,
right?
Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. Though I guess the library books are free, you know, if you have your library card. I don't know how the vending machine works exactly, but I guess you put your library card
in. Yeah, that's
right.
I can't visualize it very
well. Me neither. Maybe we need a road trip out to go now.
Are you going
to
start in the post office next, Dana?
I mean, imagine. It has to be huge, though.
I know. Well, that's kind of true.
Wouldn't it have to be a huge vending machine?
I mean, clearly they can't have that much in it.
I mean, what are
they going to have, 12 different titles? Yeah. I mean, they can't have much, right?
I mean, it's got to be enormous. I'm picturing this giant vending machine, you know, with books.
That would actually be something to see.
Yeah.
I think we need a road trip out to Gwinnett. That's all I'm saying. All right. So moving on, Woodward Academy is going to be doing drug testing, random drug testing on their students. Thoughts?
Wow.
Now, what age group is that?
I believe it goes up through high school. I don't know if it's middle school and high school or if it's just high school.
But it's not the first one to do that, right? I think there's some others.
It's not the first, but I think it's one of only a couple in Georgia. I think maybe it's the second school in Georgia to do it. And it is private. Woodward Academy is private, obviously. I guess the word academy sort of implies that. You don't hear too many public schools called academy.
Right.
but what they're saying is that the drug crisis, whatever you want to call it, the drug use in high school students is significantly higher, actually, in private schools. Probably because they have more money.
Yep.
Well, this is the first I've heard of this. My daughter went to Marist.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking, and this is not an area that I certainly excel in. She graduated 10 years ago, so this is not something that I'm
now you are on. Aging yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I am. But, you know, some of the boutique drugs seem to come from the medicine cabinets.
Right.
And are a concoction of what you find in the medicine cabinets.
Yeah.
And just thinking about this, the answer is anything we can do to save a child.
Yeah.
It is absolutely worth it. I can't imagine why anybody would object to that. Because
someone will, but I certainly don't.
Absolutely. If I save one child, I can't think of a more dangerous. I've had a close friend and relative, the son, die of drugs. And it sent him down a wrong path. He got into it. He couldn't get out of it. And if you can save just one child with any kind of program, it is absolutely worth it.
It is. I'm just glancing at the story as we're speaking, just to clarify, it is grades 9 through 12 that they're going to be doing this. I wish we had a high school student in here to debate this with us
I don't know if that would work, Dana, because we all know that although they're brilliant in many things, they have their judgment in many cases is still evolving.
Right. All right. I'm going to play devil's advocate.
That's the point. They don't know anything
about certain
things.
Right. But,
that's why we get worried when they drive a car, because their mind is on different things. They're not fully evolved.
Maturity.
I'm not sure everybody in this room is fully evolved.
No, gosh.
Certainly in high school. And certainly in high school and in the grade schools, and I think Marist goes even younger than that. I'm not sure how far down the school food chain they go, but judgment is not exactly their strength, and that's what we try and teach them in school.
Well, here I'm going to play devil's advocate just for funsies, and I'm going to state for the record that I also have a daughter who is now in college, so I've been through this as well. And if she were here, I can hear her right now,
absolutely.
If she were here. So I'm just going to play devil's advocate. I think I can see both sides of it. I can see where the kids who are good kids, who are doing well in school and who are being responsible, but maybe who, like, you know, smoke a little joint from now and again, don't want to be drug tested and don't feel like they should be. If they're maintaining their grades and they're being responsible and they're not driving while they're under the influence and whatever, you know, maybe from their perspective, hey, you know, like, give me a break.
Yeah, go for it. And by the way, you can drive on the wrong side of the road as long as no one's coming the other way. It's okay.
Well, but so random.
That's right, illegal, but that's okay. But so, I mean, we've crossed the bridge of a lot.
I'm just saying, random.
What's legal and what's not legal.
Yeah.
So, right, but they generally speaking,
go for it.
They don't pull you over unless they have.
If they see you going down the wrong side of the road.
They're going to pull you over.
Whether,
but if they don't see you, like in other words, if you're driving down this road,
so it's not wrong if they don't see you.
No. But I'm saying, can they come if they? You know what I mean? If there's no reason to suspect me of being a drug dealer, they're not going to come knock down my door and check my house for drugs, right? They have to suspect me before they can come into my house, and they have to have a warrant before they can come into my house.
The house
right?
is not a public domain,
right?
Right. But I'm just saying, college, as a human being, as a person, my pee is my own.
Let's look at it this way: college is a public domain. Schools are a public domain, which means if you're endangering my child.
Right.
You're endangering me, and I have a right to say that. You know, I hold the school accountable for creating a safe environment for my children.
Right. But if I'm a high school student and I'm saying I look clean and well kept and I have
but
good grades.
But those kind of kids wouldn't care.
That's right.
They'd be like, fine.
But
I got nothing to hide.
I don't know. Just wait. They get up in arms just because of the rights infringement.
That's right. And they're going to make sure. And one of the things I'm, again, I don't know, but one of the things that I'm almost certain is going to happen is that the student body is not going to rat on the other student body.
Right. Yeah, but it's random. It's random drug testing. So they're not,
but
they're
going to
just test randomly. They're going to go like,
you know what that
like
says?
I got randomly screened at the airport the other day. You know, it's going to be like that.
Well, and what that says is, hey, this is not right.
Right.
And if you get caught, you get the consequences. And that gives that gives some strength to the ones in that curriculum in that school that says I'm against this, and now there's somebody on my side that takes responsibility for trying enforcing that as opposed to students enforcing it among themselves.
And I think it helps. It's a wake-up call for parents.
Absolutely.
Who may be turning a blind eye or being naive
Absolutely.
About it.
Right.
You know, to some extent enabling it in a passive way.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, going to wake them up to say, you know, this is, I don't want my kid to get caught for
Absolutely.
Drug use. Because it's going to come back to the parent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think I can see both sides of the argument for sure. I just think the kids that need to be caught, I'm like with you. They should be caught. Though I still think without random drug testing, you could probably do a better job at cracking down. Like,
but
I think, in other words.
No pun intended, right?
But
crack it up. But the problem, though, is if you do that, then you have the whole thing about stereotyping.
Profiling
and everything else.
Right. So if you take the kids that wear their hair shaggy and wearing the boots or whatever, then those are the ones you drug test, and the kids that look preppy don't get tested
And those are the ones, as you said, in private school are probably the ones on some kind of drug.
So they're uniform based.
Random testing is the only fair way in a sense to do it.
Yeah. It'll just be interesting to see if the kids protest or how it plays out or if we just never hear anything about it again, which is very possible.
Because if kids protest, you know it's wrong. Right. Like protesting eating greens and protesting.
Well, I think there'd be a good part of kids that would not protest.
I agree. I think so too.
Well, that's just because they're lazy. That's got nothing to do with how they feel about things. They'll argue. They'll talk about it with each other while they're getting high, but they won't actually get out there because they're too lazy.
Nice, Dana.
Sorry. Nice. Just kidding. And speaking of cracking down, Peter, one of the major cruise lines that we all know is cracking down. This is the term
it's
right out of
time.
The news story. Cracking down on chair hogs.
Deck chair hogs on their ships.
That's right. So if you're one of those, Larry's cracking up. Larry, you're a deck chair hog. One of the people.
No, I was just thinking about the airlines who made certain people buy two seats.
Those people are literally chair hogs.
I can just see the cruise ships are saying you have to rent two chairs. You know, two.
Well, this is people who leave their towels chairs. Or books on the chair. Yeah.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. And come back 3 hours later expecting their seat
to
be there.
So I think what people do, I think, you know, regular cruisers, I've only been on, I think, two cruises in my life, and one of them was sort of in a place where you didn't really want to be on the deck chair because it was cold out. But you, people, I think, get up early in the morning, go out to find the perfect deck chair, put their stuff down, and then they leave. And they come back 4 hours later after they went back to sleep and had breakfast and went running or whatever it is, and they come back to get their deck chair. Well, meanwhile, the people that woke up at 10 and come out, there's not a deck chair to be had, but there's tons of empty ones with towels and bags on them or whatever. So I think it's Carnival Cruise Line that is now cracking down on this rampant problem. And they are like, this is the part that actually cracks me up. They're walking around, the staff is walking around, so they're now spending staff dollars to have staff walking around, and when they see an empty chair, they tag it. and then they
with a time stamp.
And then they come back later, and if it's been 40 minutes, they take the stuff off the chair and they put it in a set location and they leave a note saying, your stuff's been moved. This chair is now free. But 40 minutes, and the story says, Larry, that 40 minutes should be enough time to eat, drink, pee, and like do some minor activity like swim.
Well, not all at once.
I am sorry.
Not all at once. They're saying if you go eat for 40, you know, or you go swim.
I know.
I don't think they're saying all at once.
40 minutes
time.
Is a little hard, I think. That's cracking down. Give me an hour at least. Sheesh. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well.
I mean, I'm not a chair hog, and I don't, like I said, I'm going on a lot of cruises, but if I leave my stuff for 1 hour to go have lunch, that seems legitimate.
Right.
Come on. Come on, yeah, now,
why couldn't someone sit in that chair for an hour while you're at lunch?
Well, because then I have to carry all my stuff with me. I wouldn't do it anyway. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Well, I think if my biggest problem is having to have my stuff in my deck chair on my cruise moved, I'm doing pretty well.
Yes. Yes.
I will drink to that.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any
sympathy here for someone's towel getting moved off their chair on a ship, on a cruise ship?
No, okay. I don't either. I just thought
it's the Titanic, I don't have any sympathy.
I thought it was funny just that it was like a newsworthy story.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, I guess they got to, if the customers are unhappy, I mean, that does, we had a story on the show a couple of weeks ago about one of the airlines or two of the airlines, I think we're making the seats even smaller. The size of the where you need the leg room, they're moving the rows closer together.
Oh, nice. Good.
Right. And I was saying, you know, I'm 5'6", and it's tight for me. So I don't know how guys do it who average, 5'11", 6 feet tall.
Right.
Where do their knees go? I don't know. Like up your nostrils? I don't even understand how that works.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And so then what ends up happening is, because I just traveled on a flight a couple weeks ago with my boyfriend, who is not even super tall, but a couple inches taller than me. And so his knees are on either side of his seat. So they're jutting into the other people. And if you're 6'4", for God's sake, I mean, I don't even know what you're doing.
First class.
I know. Well, it becomes really, and you talked about the airlines asking people to buy two seats if they're big. For the first time ever, I flew on a plane where I was in a three-seater and I was on the aisle and the woman in the middle needed a seatbelt extender. And this was the first time that's ever happened to me. And it was, I felt bad for her because I know she was somewhat embarrassed that this was the situation she was in, but it was horrible for me. I paid for my seat and I didn't get a full seat. I got 2/3 of a seat and I was hanging out into the aisle, hurting my neck and feeling bad the whole time. And I was uncomfortable and I was really irritated.
Here's a question. Did she get there at the crack of dawn and save her seat?
With a chair,
yeah.
A towel?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well,
if she had, it might have been a better situation for everyone.
I just fly NetJet.
What's that?
I just do private jets.
Oh, well, excuse me,
Sorry.
Mr. Ritz Group.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
And on that note, we're going to skip over our two invisible guests and move right to you, Larry. Let's put you in the hot seat, Mr. Private Jet.
Well, there when you were talking, I thought you were trying to get free tickets on Carnival Cruise Line. I thought I might try for NetJet.
Well, I'd like free tickets on Carnival and on the airline where they're making their seats smaller in first class, of course. I do think that's a whole issue, and I do want to talk to you about the Ritz Group, Larry, but I do think that airline issue is they got to do something. Because, you know, I would like everyone to be thin and in shape just because, first of all, I think it'd be nicer to look at when I'm walking down the street, but also just because it'd be healthier, and it would be great if America would get rid of this obesity problem and everybody would be fitting comfortably in a small chair. However, how much of our population is obese in the United States?
30% or something like that. And Georgia's terrible.
And how many are, so 30%,
mm-hmm.
And then how many are like just not hitting that mark but are still pretty big?
Right.
You know, probably another 30%, right? So 60% of the population will say, I'm making this up, but is not skinny. So the airlines are catering to 12-year-olds. Like, who is supposed to fit in these chairs? Not tall people and not round people, small, sticky, skinny people.
Yeah, that's weird, actually, that they're doing that.
It's crazy. It's so crazy. And we just keep taking it, you know? Like, I'm just saying. We just keep it.
No, you're not. You just, no one's forcing you to fly anywhere.
Yeah, but that's not true. Because
you could take a ship.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, you could walk to Boston from here, because that would work. You kind of have to fly in today's modern economy and today's families. My family's all over the world. And
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it irritates
Skype.
Me.
Yes.
I know. I know. Who needs to see them in person?
Right.
That hugging thing is completely overrated.
Totally.
So now that we've warmed you up, Larry, from your terrible commute down here, how are you feeling?
Great.
All right. So Larry is the CEO, So am I getting this right? Of the Ritz Group, recently acquired Ritz Group. So I know you've been making a tour of the internet radio stations here in town, but well, you know, I thought it was just me that you love, Larry, and I was wrong, and I'm very disappointed in that. But
I love you. But I like
everybody else.
You know, I like Stone.
Yeah, they're nice guys. I'll give it to you. So for the listeners who just tune into this show, can you just give us a quick sort of overview of the Ritz Group?
Well, our first meeting, by the way, is tomorrow.
Okay.
At the City Club. And the Ritz Group is a an organization, a networking organization, an online organization that connects entrepreneurs who are selling private securities or ownership in their company to investors who invest in that. And those investors are classically angels, angel funds, which are groups that buy multiple private securities,
right?
And VC, that famous word VC.
Yeah.
And so we support, we do a match.com online to try and match angels and investors with companies that are in the genre that they're investing in, i.e. medical, i.e. early stage, i.e. later stage, i.e. clear path to profitability.
But now, Larry, isn't this where this is sort of the new part of the Ritz Group, the technology part? This is what you brought together by buying the Ritz Group at this point.
My company does private collaborative communities for vertical markets based on the theory that my profile on Facebook for grandma, you know, it's not my profile on LinkedIn.
Right.
It's also not my sports profile. It's also not my yachting profile if I was into the yachting.
Or your private jetting profile.
So you have a different profile, a different genre based on the community or the group that you belong to.
Yeah.
And almost every, to include businesses, will have their own private customer profile. It represents what we called in the old days the focus group. So they can get feedback from their customers. Because the number one problem that any business has, as we've discussed here earlier, is how do I get to the customers with a new changing paradigm of how they're buying?
Yeah.
And if and this is where the consumers are really driving the way that which they're going to purchase product, which then forces the seller to mold to that way that he can reach the most consumers.
So people now can go online, but they also have, because of the Ritz Group's existing format, they have this in-person networking opportunity.
Sure.
Do you feel like people are still getting something out of that versus wanting to be all online?
Well, it's the both. It's the combination that's really important. As they say in the retail business, which I've been in for a long time, it's still a feel-and-touch marketplace.
Yeah.
You can't replace the relationship completely. Like, no, it's a relationship business. I mean, everything is a relationship business, ultimately.
It is. It's all about Match.com. You know, you image yourself online. What you're looking for is that first date. You have the first date, and you need a venue with which you can precipitate the first date. And then the relationship either blossoms or it falls apart very quickly. And we're very much like that.
You know, this is a funny thing. I don't know why, but if I could eliminate the phone altogether in terms of talking on it, I would. I'm perfectly fine with online communication, and I'm perfectly fine with in-person communication, but something about the phone, I just can't stand it.
My God, you're a radio host.
I know, and I love this. I'm happy to, but there's something about that the phone communication that's just bothersome to me, because I like to see people's faces, or maybe it is, or have time to read something and absorb it. But on the phone, you get neither of those.
Well, and look at texting. If someone would have said, I've just invented texting.
Yeah, you would have said, what is this nonsense?
You have to use your thumbs to do what? And why can't, when you do all that, why can't you just call the person?
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And the young people will say to you, well, I don't want to interrupt them. It's, you know, they can't pick up the phone, but they can look while you're in a meeting, and they can see they just got a text from Uncle Henry.
Right, right.
And so that, again, the new paradigm of how people are communicating and how people are buying impacts almost every industry you can think of, to include the business that I'm in, which is matchmaking people that are seeking funds with people who have funds and are trying to invest and grow the economy and get a real benefit from the growth segment of somebody who's starting a company who could potentially have an IPO or merger or acquisition.
Right.
So, Larry, your customers then are both people who are looking buy and people who are looking to sell.
Absolutely.
And they come to you and say, you know, I've got this great idea for a small business. Mm-hmm. I need some capital. What do you think of, or what's the relationship with the Kickstarter campaigns?
Well, that's the brand new entree into the ability to raise funds from the public.
Right.
Now, I guess the best way to characterize what Kickstarter is, that's crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I guess the best way to characterize that now is let's just pretend that we were going to start a company. Mm-hmm. And that we were going to start. Let's go back to our Lincoln Log Company. That we were going to create the Lincoln Log Company. We knew our end target was to go compete with the Lego store.
Right.
Okay. The first thing that we'd have to think about is where we're going to get our money. Mm-hmm. Well, if the three of us have the company, we're going to then all put in, $10,000 a piece, $5,000 a piece.
Maybe you could put a little more.
Yeah, because you have the private jet.
I have to sell
everything.
The jet.
No, they're fine. Yeah, well, that's true. I got to sell the ship. So.
I hate when that happens. So we're going to put some money in. And that money we're going to spend between the three of us. We're not going to take salaries, and we're going to create a prototype probably of our logo, our Lincoln Log thing. We're going to create some materials to say what a great idea this is. We're going to use the Lego as a reference point, and that everybody loves Lincoln Logs. It has the same building feel. They have the same outlet. So we have a neat model with which people say, "Are you crazy?" Mm-hmm. We can say, "No, look, they're doing it." So that's really a neat part of that. So then once we run out of money, okay, we have to then say, what do we do? Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to max out our credit cards.
Well, the first thing we're going to say is, Dana, will you stop spending all the money on shopping?
Okay. Well, that's true.
And then.
Well, that's really true. I mean, we have to be very, very judicious in how we spend our money, but we're going to start maxing out our credit cards.
Right.
When the credit cards are maxed out, we're going to go to family and friends. We're going to go to our spouses and say, hey, look, we want to cash into some securities.
Right.
And when she says no, this is the dumbest idea she's ever heard in her life. Okay. But then at some point in time, you'll then be a pest at the family get-togethers, and Uncle Harry, who doesn't want to hear you talk about this anymore, because that's all you can talk about, because you're a real entrepreneur and you see the vision.
Right.
You can see your store right next to the Lego store in Phipps Plaza and in every mall throughout the country. He's going to get just tired of it, and he's going to give you some money. That's called friends and family. Right.
Or former friends and family.
Yeah. So now we're sitting there and we've got enough money, but we're going to run out of money again because you just don't do what we just described with every mall in the country with what I call two guys and a dog named Blue.
Right.
It just doesn't make. The scale is too much. So now the answer is, where do we go? Well, the answer is we could go to the Ritz Group. Right. But before we go to the Ritz Group, we could then say, hey, let's try and see if we can extend our family and friends beyond that, put it on the Internet, and see if people invest in our Lincoln Logs idea. And so we do that. And we get a lot of people who say, gee, I want to put in $10, $15, $20 because I really think this is a neat idea. So now we've extended our family, friends, and fools, and we've got a lot of people to give us money. Right. And now we don't have to go to the Ritz Group.
But let me ask about the fools, because so you're average Joe consumer, and somehow you get on an email list where they're trying to raise money for this thing, or you go on one of these crowdfunding websites. I think there are several, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
And you look at it and you go, oh, that looks like a cool project. But what do you get for your $5 or $10 or $20?
Well, that's really key.
Nothing, really.
Well, no, you have to get something.
Oh, for the Kickstarter?
Yeah, well, with the Kickstarter, yeah, with all of these things, here's what it does. We've just extended that, but before I put in $10 or $15, $20, it either has to be a donation, which means our Lincoln Log idea is just a project. And so if you put in $10, $20, $30, you're just part of the project. So that's a donation. You have no expectation. The key is, what's the expectation? And that really key, and we really want to get into that in some detail. The expectation here is it was $10 and it was a neat idea. I could say, oh, by the way, we're going to send you the starter kit for Lincoln Logs.
Right.
Okay. And that's for people who contribute $100 or more, you get a starter kit. Now, what we're really doing is we're pre-selling the product.
Right.
And getting people excited.
Yeah. And on all of the crowdfunding missions, now, they set a criteria saying we're going to raise $100,000through this facility, and you can contribute in 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever the increments are. For every increment, you have a prize on the other side, or a reward, or an expectation. And if we hit $100,000 in donations, everybody's credit card gets dinged,
and everyone gets their prize.
And everybody, well, that's
right. But if you don't get
hopefully,
but if you don't get the money,
hopefully you get your prize.
Right.
you know.
Oh.
And that's the responsibility. Now,
Wait a minute.
Okay.
So I put my $20 in, and
right.
my prize is a T-shirt.
Uh-huh.
But I don't get my T-shirt unless you get $100,000 total.
Well, I just
no,
was
no, no. You're not on the hook for the. You're not on the hook. Your credit card doesn't get.
You get pledged $100,000.
Unless I get $100,000 in pledges, then I have to give everybody T-shirts if and when the T-shirts are made.
Right.
Okay. So we're liable for the T-shirts. Now, so then what you're going to do at that point in time, let's just say a million people got all excited about Lincoln Logs. Well, now I'll go to the Ritz Group and I'll say, we have now commitments for the public really loves this idea.
It's always a proof of concept.
It's a proof of concept.
Yeah.
It's an absolute fantastic focus group.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has a place in there.
Huh.
And that we also have a liability for delivering 100,000 or a million, whatever the word, T-shirts.
Right.
We have to deliver the product we're going to build.
Right.
And that's really a great testimony. So what we've really done with crowdfunding, and we'll talk about one more level of detail in it. What we've talked about crowdfunding is we've talked about now expanding to the public the friends and family
right.
syndrome. That's particularly important because they're now getting in at an early stage.
And it's like a feeder system for Brits.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because now when we get in, the first thing, let's take our Lincoln Log thing. Now we come with Lincoln Log.
We have to do this now, by the way.
I know,
I'm so
right?
excited
this
now.
Is like the best idea ever.
So now what we've got to do with the Ritz Group is now we're going to go online. We're going to put an elevator pitch as to what we're really trying to do, what our concept is, the retail concept. We're going to do Lincoln Logs. It follows the model. The competitions are Lego. But we think there's enough market space for all that. There's this many children in the world. These are great gifts for birthdays and that. We're going to have Lincoln Log parties. But you've got to do this in a paragraph. You have to then present an executive summary. And now we are, in this model, we are selling shares in our company, Dana's Lincoln Log, Inc.
Right.
Okay. So we have a lawyer. We're incorporated. We have a business plan. Okay, we have an executive summary. We have a financial summary. Now we've got to address the issues of issuing shares of stock for our Lincoln Log company.
Right.
How do you do shares of stock? Oh, that's kind of interesting. Well, we all know that if we're going to be with the SEC and we're going to go public with our company, we have big-time lawyers, audited financial statements, that the SEC is real strict so that we don't, you know, that we're compliant with when we issue public shares of stock. Private shares, the SEC still controls the issuance of private shares and the registration of private shares, and they set the rules that you can only do it to accredited investor. Well, now take that back to crowdfunding. How many of those people
right.
do you think that sent us in $10, $15, $20, or $100, how many of those people do you think are really accredited? And we didn't go out and say, I want to make sure that before you give me $100 that your family's not starving.
Right.
So that takes on a whole new issue of compliance and authentication if we start crowdfunding not for T-shirts.
But for stock.
But for stock.
Can you do that?
Not now. Currently, you can't because
of the regulations, right?
It's against regulations now. In fact, the Crowdfunding Act and the Jobs Act that's before us is passed Congress. It passed the presidential signature, and it's now to the SEC to validate that if indeed it is liable or it is compliant, and we're into a 30-day period of public can now come back and say that this is acceptable or this is non-objectionable. And after the 30 days, the SEC will make their ruling by January 1, and at that point in time, it can become law. And what it currently says, and it's subject to change, so somebody will come and check me on this, but what it says is that when you're issuing security with crowdfunding versus a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
When you're issuing securities, a stock certificate.
Yeah.
That you can only you can now publicly advertise it through a registered site. Kickstarter's not registered; they only do projects and promotions.
Right.
40 billion in Atlanta. will be licensed and has this as a vehicle. But you have to have you have to be registered. You have to. You can only raise $10,000 per individual. They can only contribute up to $10,000, and you can only raise up. You can only sell up to $1 million. So what we see is we see the government saying, "Well, it's okay to do prizes."
Right.
Okay. That was HR 2930 said it was okay to do prizes, and Kickstarter only does projects.
Right.
Where if you invest in my movie, I will give you a credit.
Right.
I may give you a walk-on role or tickets to the theater.
Right.
But when you start getting into the theory of I'm selling a registered stock certificate to you, you contribute a certain amount of money and you're getting certain shares of stock. That's a different liability that we and our Lincoln Log company have to really deal with.
But I think that is going to, if they can get that passed, then that would incent a lot more people to do it. Because while I might want the T-shirt, I might want to help you, I might think it's a great idea, and I'd want to have the starter T-shirt that, you know, everyone's going to have, and it's going to be worth something someday, ha ha. You know, if I know that, like, even if I can't afford to invest in, quote unquote, a big business, a real business, I don't have the savvy to buy stock, let's say.
Right.
But I read your idea. It sounds like a great idea to me. And I would love to be in on the ground floor, even if it's just one share.
Sure.
Because, you know, one share of Apple, that might have done something back in the day if it split and it did this and that and whatever, you know. So for 20 bucks or 100 bucks or whatever, I'd take a share.
Well, the couple Kickstarter campaigns I was just involved with, one is a donut shop that opened in Decatur.
Yeah.
And they had a Kickstarter campaign.
Did it work? Did they get their money?
They did. And they're going like gangbusters now.
Very cool.
Because they opened a freestanding store. And the reason it worked was, it to your point, it builds that enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
It builds a loyal following. It builds wanting to see you succeed.
Yeah.
Getting excited about it. And then they turn out to buy the donuts. And then a friend of mine in Durham had a shared office environment that he was renovating some space to do that. And he had a Kickstarter campaign. And I actually contributed to that. And to Larry's point, I got, you know, a free day at the office, you know, for my contribution.
Right.
Or a free month of membership at this office, shared office space for my contribution. And again, only if they hit their number did I get charged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they hit their number and I got charged, and then they made it. Now they're in the new space. And now they're doing great. So, I mean, it's an interesting model.
You have just described where I think it has its greatest value. If you came to the Ritz Group with a model and said, I was going to create a $1 million business with your business idea, we can all live very nicely, the cottage industry, on $1 million. That's a great business. But if you can't scale it and put that business to 200, 300 million, then you're not going to have an exit strategy for the investors that are there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you use crowdfunding for these local businesses that are only going to be $1 million, that the constituents in the area that are going to support that, it is fabulous, given the fact that it is so hard to go to a financial institution and
nowadays,
get a loan.
Yeah, nowadays.
This is how we bring back neighborhoods. Crowdfunding is how we bring back neighborhoods.
I know. It's so interesting. You know, having had that retail bookstore before any of this existed, I think I could have raised some money doing that, because
absolutely,
there were a lot of people when we decided to close after 5 years in business who were really crushed that we were closing. You know, we were sort of their community bookstore. We had couches and a comfortable place to be.
Absolutely.
In an old converted house and all that. And people loved it, but we just couldn't keep it going. And if we had had more marketing dollars, we probably could have kept it going. And so if we had been able to raise some money for marketing, we probably could have kept going.
Mm-hmm. And those are the companies that have been the greatest impact because of the recession in the economy. Because they, when you, Dana, as you know, running a small business, you do not have a lot of fat.
Oh, no.
The reason they were, the stock market is setting records and the big companies are doing well, it's because they were able to cut excess expense and reduce market sizes and match that, whereas the small business couldn't.
Right.
So now how do we bring small business back? You bring it back by crowdfunding, just by the people that say, I have a great idea. Mm-hmm. The internet and the scale enables them to absolutely market and the local population that's going to support that and make it a success. They've bought into the enterprise. Are they going to make and ramp up as if that company franchises and goes broad? Probably not. But the answer is that gets another opportunity for them to act as an angel back in to something like the Ritz Group. And there are other great organizations in this city that support growing businesses through selling private securities for their company. So I'm really very pro crowdfunding on the non-security side, on a prize as a focus group to get consumer feedback. As we branch into the selling securities online, then we have to deal with the regulations. One of the things that you'll see if we were to take our Lincoln Log Company and bring in investors, and let's just say we were successful, we imaged on the Rich Group, we went to the monthly networking meeting, we were successful through Pitch Tank to be selected as a presenter. We have three people present at each monthly meeting. We have 10 booths, so we could have a booth. We could maybe be qualified to be a presenter, and we feel real good. And we had a lot of investors that says, I want to talk to you about that. Retail is my space. I've got real great experience in retail. And you think, oh, that's wonderful. And one of the theories that I'm an advocate of is that people from an industry invest back into that industry. All right. So it's we've got a bona fide investor retailer is going to come in. And the answer is, this is wonderful. And Dana comes or Peter comes and says, Larry, I don't like the guy. He's not going to be a good partner. He doesn't meet with our team chemistry. He's going to try and run everything. He's bringing all his friends in. It won't be my company.
Yeah.
Now, that is all part of the process. And again, you don't accept that offer. You find that perfect compatibility, because I'm not characterizing angels or angel funds or VCs as bad people. They're not.
Right.
They're there to really – it's not easy to take a company and go from $1 million to $5 million to $25 million to $50 million,
right,
and just think there's not going to be any bumps in that road.
Of course.
That's just naive.
Right.
Okay. But here's the point. And I'm all driving to a point. If we were that – if we put that much scrutiny into one or two angel investors, what's going to happen – if we did crowdfunding for securities and we had 300 or 400 investors in our business, and if they weren't happy with the way we were running our business, what are they going to do then? They're going to go on the internet. They're going to be a voice that could actually take down the company. It was different if I didn't send them a T-shirt, but now I'm not running the company the way it
that
really
they
needs,
own.
That
part, they own. Piece ownership, yeah.
Now, in an SEC, in a public company, we're pretty well, you know, we have stockholder meetings, and that's pretty well organized in terms of you have a great expectation, and you. But when we're into the area, if this passes for having ownership at the crowdfunding level, we've got some real issues there that I think that we as three for our little Lincoln Log Company really have to address. We want to do that.
Yeah.
I would recommend that we then do just the prize, see what kind of feedback we get in that. If we get great feedback in that, I would not offer securities.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if you don't have to give anything away, right? Why would you?
Well, the stock part makes it complicated.
It complicates it.
Sure.
And it makes you have to be regulatory. It gives them more ownership. With ownership comes a voice. That voice in today's media can be disastrous.
Right.
Larry, before we run out of time, because I don't want to forget this, if people want to find out more about the Ritz Group, where do they go?
Ritzgroup.org.
That's easy.
The Ritz Group or just Ritz Group?
Ritzgroup.org.
Okay.
All right. Ritzgroup.org.
.org.
And you have a meeting coming up next week.
No, meeting coming up tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. This week.
Tomorrow.
You have a meeting coming up this week.
Tomorrow. You have to register online. Go to Ritzgroup.org. Go online.
Are there criteria to be able to attend?
You have to be an entrepreneur.
Okay.
You have to be an angel investor.
Okay.
Or an invested organization or a VC.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
And so, you just apply online. And we authenticate you that
Who you say you are.
Who you say you are.
And you still have time to do if people
you
register
can do it today.
Today.
If you do it today, then you'll be all right. If not, we do it every month. So
okay. So
there's
always next month.
There's always next month.
There you go. All right. Well, we are just about out of time here, so we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to thank our invisible guests, Jewel and Farouk. I'm sure we'll get them on another show. Hopefully, Jewel's not sitting on the side of the road somewhere with a flat tire, but. But big thanks to Larry for taking the place of two other guests and chatting with
Thank
us
you.
And helping us come up with a great company idea for Lincoln Logs.
Yeah.
And of course, thanks to Peter Ashley for sitting in as my co-host.
You're welcome. Thank you.
As always, I want to thank our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. To learn more about World Trade Center Atlanta, go to WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and for myself and Peter Ashley, you've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud member of Central Atlanta Progress. Of course, you can learn more about them at AtlantaDowntown.com, and be sure to stay tuned for Southern Hospitality coming up next here on Business Radio X.